show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am your host, Jeff Hearn. With me, as always, is the man who needs no introduction, but we're going to give you one anyway because it's been a while since we've been with you guys. Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this continually frigid evening?
I'm pretty good. We were talking before the show. I'm doing a fantasy football playoff team draft, and I got the first pick overall, so I'm going to take Patrick Mahomes.
Hello, Patrick Mahomes.
Kansas City Football Chiefs, and see how far that goes. So,
hopefully further than one round. I've only seen it once in my life that they've gone further than one round. I've never seen them get past the second round. Well, technically I have, but not that I can remember, because it's been literally 25 years.
Jeez.
So, yes. Anyway, sorry, blanked out for a second. What happened? but it's been a while. I'm a little out of practice.
We're a little rusty.
It's
almost
been the
spring
holidays.
Training for us too.
That's right. That is right. I hope you had a good holidays, Mike. Mine was pretty good. Lots of family, lots of stuff going on, but also some time off, which is always good. Hope you got to take some time off. I know the kids coming back for second semester probably cuts things short a little bit. Maybe not.
To get a little bit, but you know, it's an easy transition back once the holidays are done. It's just like,
yeah,
it's quiet enough that it's like, all right, we can get back into it. So. Yeah, but yeah, got about a week off. It was pretty nice. It worked
nice.
Out. Yeah, that Tuesday Christmas Day is pretty nice. Guarantees a 4-day weekend, and then you just use time off on the edges to extend it a little bit. And that's what I did. So,
fortunately, I had to. We were open on Monday for the Christmas Eve. I took it off because I was like, nah.
Right,
but we were still open. New Year's Eve as well, and I did not. I was out of vacation. Christmas Eve was my last day, just in time for the end of the year, but I did not take it for New Year's Eve, so I still had to go to work that day, which is kind of annoying, but at the same time,
yeah, it's whatever.
Not
I
the
mean
thing, because nobody's there. It's not like here, you know, there's a ton of stuff that absolutely has to get done on the very last day of the year, so
nobody does anything on New Year's Eve until nighttime anyway.
Exactly.
So,
but the holidays are over, and now we're back. We're back in full force.
Back to work.
As we're gearing up now for the 2019 Royals season, because we're officially in 2019. Pitchers and catchers are going to report in like 6 weeks. I mean, it's all going to start happening real fast. The winter meetings are over. All that stuff has happened, and it's done with. And now it's all about looking forward to this 2019 Royals season. As we come upon that, you know, the Royals continue to kind of trickle out some moves here and there. So they've had some transactional things that we'll start with and just kind of do some quick hits on these. Of course, the Terrence Gore signing, the Royals' big get for the offseason, has been signed to a one-year contract for $650,000. So we were talking about this before the show, and If there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract, which I agree with, there's absolutely no such thing as a bad one-year contract for less than $1 million. And the kicker is, I believe if he stays in the minors for the whole year, it's only $350,000. Is that right? Or how does that?
Yeah, if he's in the majors all year, he'll end up making $650,000. If he's in the minors, I mean, he's guaranteed the $350,000 just as part of it, even if he ends up spending the whole year in the minors. So. It's a pretty good deal, really, when the league minimum is about $550 for a big leaguer to get that, even if he gets sent to the minors. So it's a good deal for him.
Yeah, for someone who's never truly shown a ton of value at the major league level, that's pretty good money. I'd take it.
Yeah.
So he, I'm sure he can certainly enjoy it. And, you know, there is possibly just a small bit of room maybe to criticize the Royals. Cause like, do you really need Terrence Gore? What do you need Terrence Gore for? And why pay $650,000? Because, you know, you're not really bidding against anybody, but it's such a small deal and so not worth it. It's just, it feels like something where the Royals are like, hey, you know, there's only a few teams that would probably take you. We're one of them. We'll just for time served, we'll give you another.
Yeah.
Throw some bones your way, if you will.
For old time's sake.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, it kind of fits in with the whole idea of like they added Chris Owings, who's got some speed to him. They got Billy Hamilton, who's very fast, obviously, and now Gore. The intent, at least according to Jeffrey Flanagan, the plan is that yes, he will. You know, they do think he can make the main roster for on opening day, but. I don't know. I mean, he has one base hit in his entire career.
That probably says more about the state of the Royals' possible 2019 opening day roster than it does about any skills of Terrence Gore.
Yeah, yeah. he'd definitely be used as that type of, you know, pinch runner. Maybe they would be really aggressive in that and throw him out there in a lot more situations than necessarily late and close. But at the same time, it's like with the way that major league rosters are set up nowadays, there's probably going to be 12 pitchers, maybe 13. You always have to have a backup catcher. It's really tough to find a spot to fit Terrence Gore on the roster. So I don't know. I've seen speculation that the split is intended to make it difficult for other teams to take him on, because why would other teams want to pay $350,000 to a guy they're just going to stash in the minors? And, you know, that's possible that that's how it is. But the other thing is that, like, why not just sign him to a minor league deal like that? Like, just do that.
Yeah.
As a result, they signed Terrence Gore. We'll see what he does. They had to designate Rosel Herrera for assignment, who I thought was pretty interesting last year. The numbers overall weren't great, but he had some moments.
He showed some flashes.
Yeah, he had, you know, he's pretty fun to watch. Good speed, could play a lot of places. You know, did a little bit with the bat, but he got picked up by the Marlins yesterday, I think. So he's completely out. But you know, the Royals, they signed Owings. He's your utility guy. They got Hamilton. That's another outfielder, and they already had a lot of outfielders to begin with. So, you know, it probably would have been tough to find a spot for Herrera anyway. So it's not like a travesty that that they won't have him. But, I mean, he's interesting. He was fun to watch. And I would say I'd rather have him on the roster than Gore, but I don't know. I don't know that either really makes too big of a difference. It's kind of more about the Royals leaning into this idea of let's be elite in team speed, and they should be pretty good on defense, which has been a formula that's worked before, and they have some guys who have some power. So the offense might be a little bit better, or they might be about the same, or they might be worse. You just don't know. There's a lot of young players, a lot of variables to consider. So we'll see. But they're gonna definitely go for team speed. You're going to have Whit Merrifield, who led the league in stolen bases the last 2 years, Adalberto Mondesi, who steals a ton of bases himself, Billy Hamilton.
I lead the league this year.
Very good chance that he does. And then Gore coming off of the bench. So, you know, there's a lot of team speed, and if they can utilize it and get guys on base and steal some bases, yeah, it might be kind of fun to watch. But I don't know. It's Terrence Gore is not, you know, it's obviously not a big signing, but he did get his first major league hit out of the way. He did that after he got traded to the Cubs last year. So he's at least punched that ticket. So that's interesting.
Go.
And, you know,
it only took him like 6 years.
Right. But yeah. But, yeah, so it goes. I mean, good for him. A lot of people like him. We'll see how the Royals end up using him. I'm not sure that I'm going to see a lot of Terrence Gore. It might be like a couple years ago where I think it was 2016, where he opened the year on the big league roster, and he played for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then they got into like injuries, and they had to make moves, and it's just like at a certain point, a guy like him who has that one trait
it's
that really helps.
It's just too difficult to balance the roster around him, because that's essentially what you have to do.
Yeah,
and he's not good enough, even at that one skill, to have to do that.
Yeah, yeah, he just doesn't get on base otherwise, and it's just difficult to you know justify using him in any way. So, if the roster was 3 spots bigger, maybe, but it's not. You know, it's not 1984 where you only need 8 pitchers, and you know you can get by with 14, 15, 16 position
crazy
players.
Specialists. Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah, so that's
there it is.
That's their big signing of the last 3 weeks.
That's their big signing of the last 3 weeks. And on top of that, they've made some other signings. We hinted at this when we talked about how they had been outrighted a few weeks ago, I guess, with the last show. But Jason Adam, Bubba Starling, Samir Duenas, they've all been re-signed to minor league deals as well. So
like the day after the Rule 5 draft.
Expected, you know, we saw that coming. We thought that they would be picked up again by the Royals after releasing. That's what most people thought, and that's what happened. So nothing huge there with the news, but you did mention the Rule 5 pick, and just as we suspected, the Royals of course did have 2 picks that they made from the Rule 5 draft. First was Sam McWilliams, who was a pitcher from Tampa Bay that they selected. And then Chris Ellis, who kind of a weird, they kind of did like a trade thing. How exactly did that work out again
to
get him?
The Rangers selected him and then just traded him over to the Royals. So the Rule 5 draft itself is only one round, or it should only be one round. And so it just kind of comes down to like a team says, yeah, we'll take that guy, probably have this stuff set up ahead of time. And then you just kind of trade some cash, you know, can you take that guy for us? Sure. Okay. That's kind of what they did last year. Like when they got Brad Keller and Birch Smith, both of those guys, they were taken ahead of where the Royals were, and the Royals traded for them. So it's kind of like, hey, can you guys take this guy and we'll give you cash. And then, okay, here you go. Here's Brad Keller. Here's Birch Smith. So, you know, 2 guys, Rule 5 rules apply. So they're going to have to be on the 25-man roster or be returned. You know, the Royals have innings to give. We saw last year they were able to balance those types of situations pretty well. You know, and if it's something like Birch Smith wasn't very good, but by the time, you know, he was really starting to fall apart, it was like, August, and it's like, well, whatever. You might as well get through the year. There's not much point in trying to, you know, send him back or anything. You just get through it. So, and Keller, of course, you know, pitched very well. So they're kind of hoping for 2 more Brad Keller kind of things. McWilliams is like 6'7". He's coming out of he used to be, you know, part of the Phillies organization and the Diamondbacks, and most recently the Tampa Bay Rays organization. So he had some decent numbers last year at A-ball and some not as great numbers in AA, but he's 23 years old. He's got, you know, good fastball around, you know, 95 he can hit. Kind of slider, split finger kind of combination. It just kind of comes down to, you know, how he can command that stuff like it always does. You know, he started mostly in the minors, but I think it's probably going to be the same. This is probably the same for Chris Ellis, where they will probably be getting innings out of the bullpen to start. And then if someone rises up, like Brad Keller, sure, throw him into the rotation. You know, 2019 is kind of a house money year where it's like, let's see what happens. You know, yeah, I'll take a shot on you know, Black 3. I don't know the the roulette number correspondence color wise, but
yeah.
Yeah, you can put all your money down on these guys and be like, yeah, let's see if they do it, great. And if they don't, well, you took a shot. So, you know, McWilliams is intriguing. Ellis is 26. He's, you know, formerly of the Cardinals organization. So, I mean, if you're going to take talent, it's not bad to take it out of the Cardinals organization. He's been a former Brave as well. They're pretty good at developing guys themselves. So, yeah, it's they're pretty much low risk kind of moves. And potentially,
yeah, it's hard to find a ton of fault there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Rule 5 is kind of tailor-made for a team like the Royals that has plenty of innings to give, plenty of opportunity to give, and, you know, if that, you know, there's not really anybody pushing up from the minors, you know, guys like Brady Singer and Dan Lynch and those types are, you know, not quite there to where they're going to be
still
pushing.
Still at least a year away.
Yeah, so you're in a position where you can really kind of see what happens, and then you know, if you get, you know, if you take two Rule 5 picks each, you know, last year, this year, and maybe even next year, and you get one guy to pan out to be even partially what Keller was, that's pretty good return. That's
yeah,
a pretty good
fantastic
way to find some talent. So, but if it doesn't pan out, then whatever, you've lost the roster spot, and that's about it. It's just not that big of a deal. So, they're definitely.
Who are you
going
to give the roster spot to anyway? Terrence Gore.
Right, who would do that? Oh wait, crap. Yeah, so worth a shot. It'd be interesting to kind of see what they do. And I think it was McWilliams was also a friend of Brad Keller, you know, because they were both in the Diamondbacks organization. So not that that means anything about anything, but
hey, good pedigree there, you know.
Yeah, it's
maybe,
you know,
maybe Keller vouched for him against, you know, for the Royals. Maybe that's how maybe that came about. Who
maybe
knows?
He can be me. All right, cool. Let's see. So, yeah, that's the, you know, the kind of the biggest news. That's probably the, those two guys are definitely probably going to be a bigger part of what we talk about in 2019 than Terrence Gore.
Most likely.
And not to drag on Terrence Gore. I'm not trying to, you know, dog him. I'm just like, it's inconsequential move.
Yes.
Like, eh. Just isn't going to make much of a difference.
It is a thing that happened.
It literally happened.
It
and
did.
That's about as significant as I can find it. Yeah.
And so one small little quick hit now also before we get into our main topic is just a fun little story. But and I don't, you've probably, a lot of people have probably seen it by now, but it came out about a week ago or so, that Brady Singer, who you just mentioned, is one of the people that will probably be pushing sometime next year to get onto that major league roster, used his signing bonus from the Royals as a giving a Christmas gift to his parents by paying off all of their debt. So that's pretty cool. You know, like everyone always says, oh, if I was an athlete or if I was a movie star or something, I got really rich somehow, I'd do X for somebody else, you know? And then, of course, when the money actually comes, rarely do people actually do those good things.
Yeah.
So, you know, and not to say that makes anybody evil or something. It's just that they don't always follow through with that kind of a stuff. It just sometimes it happens. But so it's really cool to see somebody being put in that position and actually saying, hey, you know what, here's something for you guys, for your parents. And you know, there is, you know, there is a decent amount of athletes and such that often give back to their parents. So that's a pretty cool little story. Just worth mentioning. Good on you, Brady Singer, for doing that. And I'm sure there's probably a lot of other players that have done it that haven't gotten any publicity. So not trying to say Brady Singer is the only one, but you know, it's a story, it's out there, and it's pretty cool. So worth mentioning.
Yeah, really good Christmas story. So I think I saw at least one other player did about the same thing. Like that story came up the next day, but it wasn't like a first round pick. It was like someone else who had, you know, a decent bonus, but wasn't, you know, a Brady Singer, you know.
Right.
So the name value does kind of shine through on that kind of story, but you know, it's great. I mean, it's nice to kind of see that. Cause like for me, like I coached Little League for a few years and just even at like the lowest level of reasonably competitive Little League with some travel involved, it's like, it's still a big commitment even there. So those parents really do put in a lot of time, You know, even for us, like we're out of Lawrence, and we would play a couple tournaments in Lawrence, but there were a couple in Kansas City and a couple in Topeka. And it's like, even that, you know, that's, you know, a decent amount of driving for those parents. And you know, then it's going to, someone's going to have to get food later, and you know, there's equipment and all that stuff. So,
I mean,
for all of that, you know, for someone in an elite level like Brady Singer, who was doing all of that stuff, well, that's, you know, the commitment that they made to him. It's nice to kind of see him kick it back to him as a gesture of appreciation for some of those years of sacrifice. So, yeah, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter hasn't gotten into any of that stuff. She'll be three in just a couple months, but I have some colleagues who have younger daughters that are still older than mine, and they do like gymnastics and dance and stuff. And I'm just trying to get an idea if my daughter ends up wanting to get into that stuff, what the cost will be. So I ask them questions, and it's like, my God, it gets expensive real quick, and your weekends are gone and everything. So you don't realize when you're a kid going through it and what your parents do, but it's a lot. So it's good that he recognized that and gave him a little bit, threw a little bit of something their way.
Absolutely. Yeah, you need to get your daughter on the video games, because then you're just buying, you make one purchase and
that's
for
true.
Both of
yeah,
them.
I've already got it. She can just borrow one. That'll be an easy one.
Your wife may not like that as much.
She will probably not be on board with it. Actually, a recent development, I've started Rubik's Cubes. I just solved my first ever Rubik's Cube like a week ago, and less than that. So, it's pretty cool. And there's like this whole like speed cubing thing. I'm not going to like get into speed cubing necessarily.
Sure.
These people do it in like less than 10 seconds. It's absurd.
I don't even know.
But I thought it was fun, because not only is it just fun to solve it, but then I'm like, okay, that'd be kind of cool to be able to teach my daughter how to solve a Rubik's Cube. And maybe, you know, because there's all these kids, a lot of them are kids that compete in them. And then there's like stuff like cup stacking championships and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that's the ticket there. Of course, that's probably a lot of travel in itself. So who knows?
Yeah, but I'm 9 solo cups is a lot less than like an aluminum bat.
That's very, very true. Or less than a leotard for gymnastics.
That's true.
So, well, in a few years, I'm sure I'll start to figure it all out of what she's into. But we'll move on to the big story. Before we move on to the big story, one just kind of housekeeping note. I want to remind again that BP Kansas City, which, you know, we've obviously been a part of for a long time, is no more now in 2019. So the archived articles should still be available via Baseball Prospectus if you want to go and find those for any of the older stuff that you want to go and read up on some prospects that Clint was talking about, or see some stuff that Leske wrote last year, who, you know, whatever the case may be. However, all the writers are still can write for Baseball Prospectus, and it will appear on the site, or can appear on the site, but it's just, you know, won't be BP Kansas City specifically. It'll just be on the main Baseball Prospectus site. So just wanted to throw out a reminder there for that. And the same goes for the podcast, of course, will be under the podcast section on Baseball Prospectus, still hosted there. So most of the time, most of you are probably getting it via subscriptions anyway, iTunes for whatever. So nothing will change on your end there. Nope. Just a reminder again. But if you do go to BP Kins or Baseball Prospectus to find us, that's where we'll be. And then as we move forward into a new day, a new era, if you will, let us know if you guys have any sort of content that you want to hear us talk about in terms of, you know, Royals topics or different things like that. You know, we've covered a ton of stuff in the history of the show. So, you know, we'd love to hear from you guys, hear what you want to talk, what you would like us to talk about. Obviously, you know, there's always stuff happening with the Royals. So, you know, we love talking about that because we love the Royals. But, you know, there's room in the podcast to talk about different things. And it doesn't always have to be current Royals. It can be about other stuff or whatever, you know. A little while ago, we did kind of a retrospective on the some of the early 2000s Royals teams, etc. So, you know, certainly something that that, you know, is open. So if there's anything, you know, we're obviously coming up with topics and things on our own, but if there's anything else that you guys would like to, you know, just hit us up, let us know, and we'll throw it into the show. Yeah. And probably mention you. So,
or if you want 45 minutes on Terrence Gore, we can do that too, but yeah.
He can certainly do
it's
that.
It's a lot more interesting to talk about the 2002 Royals and their path to 100 losses and things like that. Or if you like guests, I mean, you know, we haven't done a lot of guests in the last year or two, and a lot of that is just making our schedules work. But if that's what you guys want to hear, we can certainly make a bigger effort towards that.
Yes, definitely.
You know, it's kind of one of those things that we kind of, you know, plan the show over the news of the day and kind of go from there. And we don't always throw it out to guests because, you know, we're kind of working on our own stuff. So, but if that is something you want to hear, feel free to, you know, express that to us either on Twitter, we're at KC Baseball Vault, or you can email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And we'll take your critiques too. If you disagree with us, you know, let us know. We can always talk about that. If you have questions, or we've done stuff over the years of like weird hypothetical situations that we've kind of talked through, and that was kind of fun. And we've done kind of stats focused, even though stats are kind of tough to do in an audio format, just because limitations.
Yes.
But I mean, we can try that too. So I mean, what you guys like. You know, if it's something you guys are into and it's going to bring you back every week, then, you know, we can definitely put in that type of effort to cater to what you guys want to hear about. So, you know, we're open. It's a new year. It's kind of we're in another transition. We've been through about a million transitions from day one of this show. And, you know, why change now? You know, if we get to shake it up, let's shake it up.
Indeed. And, you know, if you want us to talk about the different paths we took on Bandersnatch on Netflix, then, you know, that's something we can discuss as well. I haven't actually done that yet, but Mike has. He's trying to get me to do it. So maybe I will.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And there was a surprising moment that really kind of hit me in a weird way that I kind of think I know why. But we can talk about that entirely later. So,
indeed.
Yep.
So now for our main topic, we, as always happens this time of year, we have the Royals' new Hall of Fame nominees. So this list this year is actually a pretty good one. And I'm going to pull it up here. And so
names,
here we go.
Young and old.
Yes.
Good teams and bad.
Yes. So for the 2019 vote, we have Jeremy Affeldt, John Buck, Bruce Chinn, Al Cowens, Raul Ibanez, Johnny Damon, Al Fitzmaurice, David DeJesus, Kevin Seitzer, Bo Jackson, and Yordano Ventura. So quite a good list there, you know, a lot of names that you recognize and names that, you know, the vast majority of them you look at and you say, okay, I would not be embarrassed to have that person in my team's Hall of Fame, right? You know, I mean, Bruce Chinn, John Buck, you know, you're in a different story there. But most of the players, like, you know, if David DeJesus or Raul Ibanez make it, you know, maybe they wouldn't make it in every team's Hall of Fame, but you'd be like, okay, you know, they make it in the Royals Hall of Fame. But I'll start with me, and we'll start with our no doubters. How about that?
Okay.
For me, the no doubters here is Bo Jackson and Johnny Damon, and I'm going to go ahead and throw Kevin Seitzer in there. Now, first, Johnny Damon is just – and you were even talking before the show about just how surprised you were with how good he was for his time in Kansas City. And I remember there was an interview a few years back when he was still playing and he was close to 3,000 hits and it was possible that he might get it. He was saying that people were asking, okay, if you end up going into the Hall of Fame, you know, you've been on so many teams, who would you go into the Hall of Fame as? And He actually even mentioned, you know, I think my best years were probably with the Royals, so I guess I'd have to go in as a Royal. And that kind of, you know, made the rounds, of course, in the local media, because, yeah. You know, Johnny Damon was never a guy that really seemed like, if years from now, Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas says something like that, you'd be like, okay, makes a lot of sense. They had a lot of good time. They really seemed to like the city. They liked the organization, etc. But Johnny Damon never seemed to be in that place when he was here in Kansas City, which is fine. He was on a lot of bad teams. It's understandable. But so it's just – I remember it was at the time kind of interesting to hear that. But regardless, just the fact that you could even – consider talking about possibly Johnny Damon being a candidate for the whole Hall of Fame means that he likely is a no-brainer for the Royals, for me, Hall of Fame. And considering how good his years were when he was here. Yeah, you know, there's jokes to be made about Johnny Damon. I'm here for him. I'm okay with it. But at the same time, you know, he was a really good player for the Royals. And Kevin Seitzer just kind of off forgotten because he was in just that weird transitional phase post World Series, pre just really, really putridly bad teams, you know, just kind of in that window was when he
he's in the lukewarm area.
Yeah, if you will, you know. So you know, George Brett was still on the team, so nobody was going to overshadow him, and that was just kind of it. But he, you know, again, he put up really good numbers and was a really good player for the team. And also, you know, I don't think this is really supposed to factor in, but what he did for the team as a hitting coach, you know, he probably was a big part of resurrecting Alex Gordon's career.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, that can't be overlooked either. And then, of course, for me, the final no-doubter is Bo Jackson. The fact that he is not yet in the Royals Hall of Fame is absurd. The man is as iconic as they come. Like, I still have to remind myself, you know, sometimes that, like, I don't know if it ever happens to people in, like, Chicago, right? Where if you're a Bulls fan, you know, you grew up and you're just like, wow, Michael Jordan, the greatest to ever play the game, was on my team, you know, or, you know, and it's still going on right now. So people in Boston probably don't quite exactly realize it, but with, like, a Tom Brady, you know, 20 years from now, people who grew up and all they knew was Tom Brady as their quarterback as a kid, seeing all these Super Bowls, and then they, you know, wow, he was on my team. So granted, the Royals didn't win a ton of championships or any with Bo Jackson on the team, but just the fact that he was so good, so iconic, just such a force of nature when it came to sports and media at that period. And he was on the Royals in such a small market, and yet he was still that kind of larger than life presence. I mean, that counts for something.
Yeah.
And you know, his career was cut short, just as his football career was, but his numbers weren't, like, you know, blow you away, but they were still really good, and he had some good years. And, you know, any Royal that can hit over 30 home runs, we've talked about this, deserves some sort of mention. And, you know, All-Star Game MVP, he's the running up the wall, just the massive home run blasts. I mean, just everything about him was larger than life. And that's a part of Kansas City's history. And when you think of the most recognizable Kansas City Royals, you know, right now, there's a little bit more just because they won a World Series a few years ago and they had some prominent players that have gone other places now. But, you know, pre-2015, if you ask the majority of baseball fans who didn't live in Kansas City, who the most prominent Royals were, George Brett, Bo Jackson, those are going to be your answers. Yeah. And the fact that he's not in the Hall of Fame or the Royals Hall of Fame is it's a head scratcher.
Yeah, and he's been on the ballot for a number of these years, and it just doesn't end up happening. So
yeah.
I don't know where the holdup is. Like, if I were to pick just three, the three that kind of worked out to me would be Bo. And it's just like you said, larger than life. He was at one time, like, the biggest athlete in the country. I mean, he was huge. Commercials all over the place. He was part of the there's like that All-Stars cartoon or something like that.
I was just going to ask if you remember that.
Yeah,
with Montana, Wayne Gretzky, and him.
And it's just like that. That's like elite of elite. You know, he had the power, he had speed, he had the arm, he had the defense, he had theatrics. I mean, he was awesome. The my favorite moment, and one of the things that got me into baseball heavily, was that 1989 All-Star game. I probably watched that probably 15, 20 times, just on VHS. And really, only the first like five innings while Bo was in the game. And of course, that's the game where he led off against Rick Rushel and hit a home run to dead center while Ronald Reagan is in the booth talking about it. Just crazy. Vin Scully and Ronald Reagan calling a Bo Jackson home run in the All-Star game. About 450 to dead center. It's just like, just awesome. Like, just so cool. And yeah, the numbers aren't great. I mean, unfortunately, he injured his hip and it, you know, took him out, and he was never the same. And shortly after, you know, trying to come back, he never really got back to it. And he went to the White Sox and the Angels, and I think maybe another team, but maybe just those two. You know, so really only got 5 years with the Royals because they had to release him because he was injured. And so it's the biggest what if. And to me, that really, his numbers are good. His story is good. You know, the shadow of him still looms. And we kind of talked about this a little bit in our Slack chat, and that, you know, just, you know, a month ago, Kyler Murray from Oklahoma? I don't know. I don't follow touch football.
Yes.
who was drafted.
Heisman Trophy winner.
Won the Heisman Trophy, is going to play baseball. It mimicked the exact same Bo Jackson black and white, you know, shoulder pad baseball bat photo. That thing comes up every like 4 or 5 years anytime there's a two-sport athlete like that, and there's a reason for that. You know, it's captivating, and I think that Bo Jackson should definitely be in the Hall of Fame, or the Royals Hall of Fame, just because of that. Just huge name and everything. I would go with Seitzer as well. You know, he's definitely in a weirdly overlooked period, but you know, he's the guy who he pushed George Brett to first base. You know, he came up as a third baseman. Brett moved across the diamond, eventually, you know, went on to be a DH. But Seitzer was right, you know, second place in 1987 Rookie of the Year voting, had over 200 hits, was solid, consistent player. You know, I think just overall his numbers, he's got the exact same number of years and wins above replacement as Johnny Damon even. So to, you know, kind of compare him that way, you know, definitely kind of works for him. His OPS plus was 115 when he was a Royal, which is highest among all of these hitters. He's actually tied for Bo Jackson, who, while the power was there, Bo struck out a lot, and you know, the batting average was never really there. So definitely, you know, two different types of hitters, but both pretty productive in their own right. And I would go with David DeJesus as my third, just because I remember watching basically his whole career as a Royal, where he was that guy who was, you know, just not elite in anything, but really pretty good in everything except arm strength. He never had a good arm. He was only kind of decent as a defender in center. He was better in left field. But, you know, could hit for average, could hit for reasonable power, was fast enough, good doubles kind of swing, you know, got on base, you know, energetic player, real big fan favorite. And I think his production, you know, in his time with the Royals, you know, he spent 8 years with Kansas City. That's tied with Fitzmaurice for the most amount of time out of these guys. And, I, you know, that shouldn't count for a whole lot, but I think it counts for something because, you know, someone like Damon, you know, he kind of forced the Royals' hand, and they ended up trading him off. And that shouldn't, like, hold him back from being in a team Hall of Fame because he's certainly deserving of it. But, like, if I were to pick three, those would be my three. Johnny Damon would be right there behind. And then overall, I would say my approach to all of this is just more binary, yes, no. Like, Jeremy Alfield, no, wouldn't put him in the Royals' Hall of Fame. John Buck, no. Bruce Chen, surprisingly productive as Royal. Still no.
Still no.
Al Cowens probably has deserved it the whole time. Johnny Damon, yes, absolutely. I would put him in there. Just you know, what he symbolized back in 95 alone, kind of gives him that level of regard for this type of
situation. He was Eric Hosmer before Eric Hosmer.
Yeah, he was going to be the guy. Everybody remembers that commercial of George Brett and Johnny Damon fighting over the remote control.
Yep.
And he never really hit that level, but like that's kind of what the hype was. Like he was a top prospect, and he was that great hope. DeJesus, I would say, yes. Alfitz Morris, his numbers are certainly good enough. I would say, yes, I could see him in there. Ibanez, I'm not sure. He was only here 4 years. He hit well, but it was also in a pretty offensive, happy era. Never that good defensively. So I would probably pass on him. Bo and Seitzer, of course. And then Ventura. Yordan Ventura is interesting because, you know, obviously, tragically, you know, his resume is incomplete. Really. I mean, he spent 4 years. He was part of that 2014 team and had that memorable Game 6 of the World Series. He had highs and lows throughout 2015. Kind of came on real hot in 2013 as a rookie. And so, you know, it's an interesting career to look back on. And, you know, I don't know just on like as objectively as I can look at it, if I would say yes, but I definitely think that there's something about him, his story and the teams that he was on that probably warrants some kind of recognition like this. You know,
well, and I go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say like of the pitchers on this list, there, I mean, there's only four of them. I mean, it's not a big list, but you know, definitely, you know, Fitzmaurice, I never got to see him. I got to see Ventura, and when Ventura was on, he was on. And, you know, that can't always count for everything, but, like, you know, he'd be the second best pitcher on the list based on, you know, just the statistics of it all. And likely could have added more to that. And it, but, you know, unfortunately, it's not a question that we can look at 10 years from now, it's now. So the circumstances, you know, probably lean towards maybe, you know, bigger consideration like that. So, you know, I don't know. It's tough because sentimentally, yeah, I would want to see him a part of it because he was on some very key teams. But statistically, it's tougher. So I could be convinced and I would lean towards more inclusion, especially for a team Hall of Fame. But I kind of see why people would say no for his kind of situation. So I don't know. I'm torn a little bit.
Yeah. And because I look at it one of two ways, or I look at it on two different facets. So your one facet is, you know, what you did on the field statistically and, you know, how good you were. The eye test, essentially, along with looking at the pure numbers of it. but then there's also, and I think you get a feeling of this, you know, we've had Kurt Nelson on the show in the past, you know, a few times. He's the kind of, I don't know what his exact title is, but he's essentially the curator of the Royals Hall of Fame.
Yeah, director.
And, yeah. And, you know, he kind of gives the sense, and I feel it a little bit as well, that, you know, the Hall of Fame is, yeah, it's about the players themselves, but it's also about, and I'm talking about the Royals Hall of Fame specifically, also about the team's history and culture and everything. And, you know, that's part of the argument with Bo Jackson is that he's just, regardless of how short his time was, he's a part of the team's history. And I think you can make that same argument, albeit in a different way, about Yordan Ventura, where you say, you know, like you said, His time here was incomplete, and unfortunately, I don't think we ever got to see the best that Yordan Ventura had to offer. Maybe, you know, for a game, but not for an extended period of time. But he was such a big part of that era of Royals baseball. Everyone's, you know, 20 years from now, everyone's going to remember Yordan Ventura on that roster. So that does count for something, and when you talk about a team Hall of Fame, and I think, you know, it's a very big piece of Yordan Ventura and his legacy. And so, you know, if I were to be as objective as possible and look at it, I don't know that I'd fully say yes, just based purely on, you know, numbers and what I saw. But taking everything into account and how much part of that team he was, and, you know, just all of those things factoring in, yeah, I think he probably does, and I think he probably will get in. So it is a little conflict there, just because, you know, if it was purely based on merit, I don't know if I would put him in. But at the same time, you can't just ignore everything else. So I would, yeah, I would probably give him a vote as well.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's in the same kind of thing as Bo Jackson. His Royals career was cut short, obviously significantly different way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, still there's a what if with both of those guys. And yeah, so still sucks. We have to even, you know, consider it. But yeah, I think it's a good point that those kind of things, that's as memorable, like the whole 2013 through 2017 period is where a lot of Royals fans are going to be, you know, have come of age, people younger than us, which isn't that difficult these days. But, you know, that's like if you're 10 years old, like that's the team that you probably spent half your life, you know, if you're getting into your teenage years, you're a young adult now, like a lot of your life has been spent towards, you know, looking at Eric Hosmer's numbers and thinking about Yordano Ventura's starts, and then that team wins a World Series, and now Yordano Ventura, you know, is killed in the accident, and that's going to be a memorable thing. Like, I think there's an argument there. So, and I absolutely, and like I said, I would lean towards inclusion when possible for something like this. I mean, the Royals, they only have 18 players in their team Hall of Fame, and I do think they could stand to have more. You know, I don't think it cheapens it that much, because it's ultimately a museum, really. You know, it's, mm-hmm, you know, maybe the retired number is another conversation. You know, I think like number 29 would be very easy to retire without much, mm-hmm, argument, considering that it was worn, yep, by two Royals Hall of Famers. Number 6 eventually probably could be retired, because Willie Wilson and Lorenzo Cain both wore that.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see on other guys from that kind of
number 3. You know it's coming.
Maybe. I mean, he's going to be in the Royals Hall of Fame
easily.
That's for easily, sure. The most wins in team history, the most games managed, won a World Series, won 2 pennants.
Most pennants, most, yeah. I mean,
that's a,
there's not a single managerial record that Yost doesn't have, I don't think, except for most wins in a season, I guess.
Yeah, he wouldn't have that. But I mean, if Whitey Herzog is in there and Dick Houser's in there, Ned Yost is going to be in there.
Yeah, so, 100%.
So
despite my feelings on Ned Yost, he's a 100% no doubter for me whenever he's eligible.
Yeah, I think a team like the Royals, you win a World Series, that manager's got to go in. And Dayton Moore will be in too. I mean, Joe Burke's in the Royals Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah, Dayton Moore definitely.
So Dayton Moore's definitely going to get in too. And you know, that's, some people are going to yap about that too. And
yeah,
like realistically, how could you not do that? You know, you took a team that lost 100 games 4 out of 5 years, and yeah, it took a while, but you made them world champions eventually. Yeah, that's going to get you in.
Yeah, he did what nobody before him could. You know, in recent history, post World Series, but before second World Series, nobody could. So yep, definitely counts for something. So, but you know, and for me, just some of the other ones, you know, if you mentioned DeJesus, DeJesus and Ibanez and Fitzmaurice and Cowens, I could probably, I could be talked into either way on those, on any of those four, likely. So you could present an argument and I'd be like, all right, I agree with you, they're in. And then you could present another argument and I'd be like, yeah, they probably don't make it. So they're definitely borderline, but I wouldn't be up in arms one way or the other. But I think we're both in agreement. Jeremy Affeldt, John Buck, Bruce Chinn, you know, decent careers with the Royals. I liked what they did for the organization. I like them as players and people, but they are not team Hall of Fame worthy players.
No, they're very much a remnant of of a different era, and one that wasn't that happy.
No.
And the tough part is a guy like Al Cowens, who he left the Royals after 1979. Like, I mean, I literally had no opportunity to watch him. But he was also runner-up for MVP in 1977. So, yeah. Like, you know, obviously, you know, he was good. He had good numbers, but, like, I never got to see him. So, I mean, I can't really vouch for him on that. Whereas DeJesus, I saw him all 8 years he was a Royal. I saw Johnny Damon the whole time he was a Royal. I saw, you know, Bo Jackson for the most part. I didn't watch a lot of baseball when I was 6 or 7 years old when Bo Jackson was up, but by 8 or 9, yeah.
And so, you know, yeah. if we want to make the argument for, you know, it's not on the same level by any means, but talking about, you know, Ventura and Bo Jackson and being a part of Royals history, you know, if you want to talk about David DeJesus and you look at him and it's not the same way as Ventura or Jackson about how indelible they are to the Royals history. But, you know, for that era, since there was just so very little to talk about with the Royals, the fact that, you know, he was a really good player and one that he had national prominence to a certain degree. People knew who he was, you know. I shouldn't say national prominence, but, you know, there people knew about him outside of Kansas City, whereas most players of that era, people did not. You know, Ken Harvey wasn't making waves anywhere else. And,
not for his bat, no.
No, yeah. Not, only for being on SportsCenter's not top 10.
Yeah.
But based on the fact that he's probably somebody that people outside of Kansas City associate with Kansas City, maybe Oakland over Kansas City, but I think a lot of people still, you know, remember David DeJesus as a Royal as well. So, you know, again, not even anywhere close to the same, but definitely a relevant part of the discussion, I think, for DeJesus, because there was that piece of Royals history where he was certainly kind of him and Mike Sweeney, that whole era, were pretty much the only national names the Royals had.
Yeah, and he did have the most wins above replacement for of this whole group, though. Again, did play the most years out of all of them. So, you know, it's just barely. He's higher than Damon and Seitzer by about 0.8. So, you know, average year, yeah, it's lower. But, you know, he contributed. So I think there's a case for some of those guys. And it kind of makes me think about, like, if you did slice it into, like, eras, like, okay, here's the Royals, you know, heyday back in the late 70s, early 80s. And then there's the post World Series up to the strike. And then there's the post strike desert of terrible baseball. You end up at that kind of point where it's like, you know, do you kind of look at the best players from each of those times and kind of go from there? And DeJesus definitely falls into that kind of that weird valley of players that, he wasn't on good teams, but he played well, and he was probably the best player on his team most of the time, even though the team was bad. And for consideration of a team honor, that, you know, maybe that counts for something, just merely standing out on a bad team. But, I mean, he was objectively pretty good most years and, you know, wasn't deficient in, you know, any one particular category. So I think he's an interesting player to kind of consider. He's definitely, obviously, not Willie Wilson. He's not George Brett. He's not, you know, those types of guys. But, you know, I think there's consideration there that, you know, I think you can kind of take a deeper look at. So,
absolutely.
But, yeah, I mean, from some of these guys, you know, in about 10 years, you're going to start seeing all the other guys like Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane and Sal and, there's just going to be a ton of guys from 2015 going in. It's just going to be crazy. Beltran will get in pretty soon. So,
oh, certainly.
Yeah, a lot of Gordon, you know, whenever he ends up retiring, whether it's after this year or in the next couple, he's probably 5-6 years away from an induction himself. So,
I mean, over the course of the next decade, 10 to 15 years, that number, that 18 Royals players could double almost.
Maybe.
I mean, between Beltran and Gordon and Hosmer and Moose and Lorenzo Cain and, you know, the people that make it in from this possible class, You know, I mean, that's definitely a lot that'll be making it within the next decade or so.
Yep, which will be fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll be interesting.
It'll be the first. It'll be the first truly good era, you know, that our generation has really known and seen play that will have a lot of worthy candidates.
Yeah, I mean, it really hasn't been that way since, you know, the first real couple of inductions where they, you know, the first guys they put in were Steve Busby and Amos Otis and Cookie Rojas and Paul Splitorff. And those are all guys I didn't see that much. Dennis Leonard, never got to see much of him. Really didn't see much Hal McRae, Freddie Patek. You know, it was really George Brett, Frank White, a little bit of Quisenberry, Willie Wilson. That was kind of the first group that I saw. And while they were there with most of that first wave, you know, it's definitely there's a split. And, you know, the Royals really haven't had, you know, those guys from like the 90s and 2000s. Really the only guys that have made it out of that grouping is, you know, pretty much like Kevin Apier, Jeff Montgomery, and Mike Sweeney. You know, otherwise it's, you know, a lot of guys from the 80s and a lot of guys from the 70s. And, you know, it'd be nice to have another wave of good players to actually do something and to commemorate and everything. And maybe a couple guys or maybe one person out of this group. You know, that'll be fun too.
Indeed. So that's all we had planned to talk about. Still kind of, you know, that it's kind of, it feels like it's taken a little bit of a cue from last season. Mm-hmm. In terms of how quiet things are, because it really used to feel like once December hit, things would start moving.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, it would. Things would. There'd be kind of some rumors and maybe a few small moves leading up to the winter meetings, and then some big moves would happen, and they'd kind of trickle out the end of the year, and then you'd kind of clean up in January and February, and then pitchers and catchers, and then it would be done. But you know, last year we talked about how uneventful the offseason was, and then. Or, I mean, for the majority of it. And then now, of course, feels like we're about that way again. So, unfortunately, maybe this is the new normal for baseball. But it feels like it's been a little bit slower.
At least until the next CBA.
Yeah, exactly. So,
hopefully they figure that out.
Hopefully so. But that is it for us. So thank you all so much for listening, and thank you all for sticking with us through the break, through the holidays. Hope you all had a good holidays as well. Hope you got some cool royal stuff for Christmas, maybe. You know, it's always a popular gift these days. So that was hope you all had a good holiday. We will be back to our normal 2-week schedule, and then of course as the season starts in just a few months now, we'll be back to weekly shows as the season moves along. So until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. We love you all. We couldn't do it without you listeners. And as we mentioned, you know, just another reminder, BP Kansas City is no more, but all the writers are still involved with Baseball Prospectus, and you can still see their content on Baseball Prospectus's main website, as can you see our podcast. And if any of your subscriptions, iTunes, whatever, all that stuff will remain unchanged, so you won't have to worry about any of that. If there's anything you'd like us to cover now between the start of the season, or any specific topics or anything like that, or even throughout the season, because we'll kind of be carrying that idea, that format throughout the season as well. So anything you guys want us to cover or any ideas you have for us or whatever, just let us know, and we'll be sure to get that covered as part of the show. So thank you all so much for listening. Couldn't do it without you. We'll see you next episode in 2 weeks. And until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.